from West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Support for the legislature today is provided by AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Learn more at aarp.org/wv. The Charleston Gazette Mail, using its CGM app to deliver the latest news, traffic, and weather alerts, keeping you in the know while you're on the go. Lumos Networks, online at lumosnetworks.com. Marshall University, with more than 100 degree programs offered in 4 locations and online. More about the Marshall family at marshall.edu. Orion Strategies, professional public relations, government affairs, creative services, and research and polling, with offices in Charleston, Buchanan, Martinsburg, Pittsburgh, and Columbus.
Good evening and welcome to the legislature today. Tonight, the Senate Finance Chair and the House Finance Minority Chair sit down with Dave Mistich to talk budget issues. But first, the West Virginia Department of Education had their budget hearing today. Superintendent of Schools Steve Payne said his request was $47 million less this year because of declining enrollment and program efficiencies. He explained the governor's budget included additional money to address the state's substance abuse problem.
I think our budget request reflects not asking for any additional funds. I think the governor's office and we believe that we have a serious problem with opioid addiction in the state. So I believe his budget reflects the fact, and I support it, the fact that we need to do something, not only with our kids, with education of our kids that are victims of this opioid addiction at home, but also something to change adults, because if we change the adults, we can change the generational poverty cycles somehow. It's a tough problem. I don't have the answers, but I think his budget reflects increases for that purpose.
The governor's substance abuse program is called Jim's Dream and includes prevention education in elementary schools, addiction treatment, and workforce training. Associate Superintendent Clayton Birch provided some details about workforce training.
We're not just looking at just the CTE centers, all 55 counties. There's actually 92 adult learning centers throughout the state in every single county, and they work hand in hand because they're out of the same office with our career technical education centers. So right now what we've done is, to give you a very mile high view, we've actually looked across the state at every training program that we feel the workforce will need, every certification currently offered, matched it up with Secretary Crouch's where he believes the recovery centers and the treatment centers will be, and tried to match it as best we can. And one piece of the puzzle we're working on right now is who will be that individual that can work both hand in hand with the treatment center, with the learning centers, and how they're going to connect those dots straight to the workplace. So one of the key elements we're looking at is a transition specialist that knows where those centers are in every single county, knows what the certifications are available in every single county, and is ready to connect them to the training once they're ready to leave the treatment center.
And there was a very uncomfortable moment for the superintendent when Delegate Daniel Linville of District 16 questioned catering bills that amounted to hundreds of thousands of dollars.
On July the 8th of 16, $72,709.92. 7/11/16, $50,332.55. December 9th, 15, $51,001. December 9th of 15, $6,974.63, and I only bothered to mention the ones over $35,000 in a single day. Can you explain to me how in the last year we've spent $250,000 with them, more than $250,000 with them, on catering, and since December 9th, 2015, $471,840.10 only in single days of more than $35,000.
We conduct professional development activities statewide that 55 counties participate in. Many times teachers, we have a, in fact, I believe this summer there was a teacher academy. What did we call it? Teacher Summit. And so when we bring those folks to Charleston, we feel it's appropriate for them to be fed. And so that's what we do. I guess when we bring professional development seminars to Charleston and we host it at the Civic Center, then that's an expense that goes along with that. I'm glad to look into that. I understand your point is that we need to reduce that. And we'll take a look at that.
Senate Bill 1, the Community and Technical College Tuition Assistance Bill, passed out of the Senate Education Committee yesterday and is now in Senate Finance. This is the second attempt to create the scholarship program. Liz McCormick recently visited a family that remains hopeful for its passage.
28-year-old Stephanie Pfizer is a student at the Montgomery campus of Bridge Valley Community and Technical College. She's halfway through a two-year business program offered there. Pfizer lives in Fayette County. She's married to a coal miner and has a four-year-old son. Prior to attending Bridge Valley, she got her GED and worked as a pharmaceutical technician for 5 years. It wasn't until recently she ever thought she could get a college education.
My husband works in the coal mines, so that automatically kind of knocks us out of any kind of federal assistance. They're considered to make too much money.
But Pfizer says thanks to a work study at Bridge Valley and filling out the required free application for federal student aid, or FAFSA, she was able to work, secure some state funds, and go back to school. At a Republican press conference last week, Senate President Mitch Carmichael said a community and technical college tuition assistance bill was vital in boosting the educational attainment of the state's labor force.
No one should be kept out of the workforce or obtaining a skill set, a stackable skill set, due to their financial constraints.
Senate Bill 1 was introduced on opening day of the 2019 session. It creates a grant program of $8 million for tuition and fees at community and technical colleges for students to tap into after all other forms of financial aid has been exhausted. This year's bill provides opportunities for younger students to participate in advanced technical programs. Under Senate Bill 1, ACE programs or advanced career education would be amended to allow middle school age students to participate. The program currently provides high school graduates with the opportunity to enter an advanced technical program of study for targeted industries. To be eligible for the tuition assistance, a student, like Pfizer, would need to fill out the FAFSA, be at least 18 years old with a high school diploma or equivalent, pass a drug screening, and agree to remain in the state as a taxpayer for at least 2 years after graduation and fulfill some community service. Last year's bill passed the Senate unanimously after this passionate plea from Senate Finance Chair Craig Blair.
I've dreamed about this since I was a farmer riding a tractor, 21 years old, in Berkeley County growing apples and peaches. Because when I was in school in 1976 and 77, they really wanted to push you to college education. You got to go to a four-year. It didn't fit for me, and it doesn't fit for a lot of us. But we can still be very, very, very productive. And I've got to add one last thing to this. When you put people into the workforce, it takes them off the entitlement rolls. That in itself pays dividends and also attracts business.
After its success in the Senate, the bill ultimately died in the House. Pfizer says if state lawmakers do pass the bill this year, she and her husband would likely pursue more education through the program.
That would be an amazing gift. What took me so long to go to college was the financial aspect of it. I mean, tuition is one thing, but then you still have books, you still have web fees, you have other expenses that come into that, and not everybody can do that. You know, most people that I know from the college, they have a job because they have to.
Community college administrators believe tuition waivers are critical in addressing the significant number of vacant but high-skilled jobs throughout the state. Sarah Tucker is the chancellor of the Community and Technical College System of West Virginia.
So we have thousands of jobs that need to be filled in the state that aren't being filled because we don't have people with the credentialing that they need in order to fill them. We know that we need to dramatically increase the percentage of folks who have some sort of post-secondary training. So right now, West Virginia lags behind the national average. We have about 31% of adults who have an associate degree or higher. That's simply not going to meet the economic workforce need of the state.
Tucker says those thousands of unfilled jobs fall into four categories: manufacturing, healthcare, technology, and the energy sector. She says all are potentially high-paying but need post-secondary education to get there. And a bill to provide tuition assistance to CTCs could go a long way.
The number one reason in West Virginia that people don't go to college is because they're scared of the cost. And so simply a bill that would tell people that you can go to college, that you have access to college, that we will help you pay for college because we believe in you and we want you to be successful, would go a long way in changing the mindset of people of West Virginia.
Because of that high cost, many students end up turning away from higher education. Renee Herdman is the senior financial aid counselor at Bridge Valley's main campus in South Charleston. She says she's seen this firsthand in her career.
We have students who are grant recipients. We have some, though, that only qualify for student loans. And some of those students choose not to attend college because they don't want to take out student loan debt. So a bill like this would allow more students the opportunity to attend college at a CTC level and hopefully not have to accrue as much debt or very little to none at all.
Herdman says most of the students she's counseled at Bridge Valley are attending with the help of financial aid. In addition to cost, there's also a stigma that surrounds community and technical colleges. Some think CTCs aren't as good as four-year institutions. But Chancellor Tucker says that's not true, that CTCs provide different opportunities for students. She also points out CTCs and the state's four-year colleges have been forming partnerships to support each other, such as credit transfer or special training opportunities. CTCs are a good first step for a student who may not know what they want to do in a career, she says.
We need to do a better job of communicating to parents and to educators, frankly, too, what a community college education means and what that can look like for their futures. You can go to a community college and end up making $90,000 or $100,000 a year with just a two-year degree. And I don't think that a lot of people understand that. I don't think that they understand the changing nature of certifications that is existing in the country and in the economy.
West Virginia is home to 9 community and technical colleges that, according to Tucker, all work locally to strengthen the job opportunities in their respective areas. For the Legislature Today, I'm Liz McCormick in South Charleston.
And I'm Dave Mistich. Joining us now are Senate Finance Chair Craig Blair and House Finance Minority Chair Mick Bates. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us this evening. We'll start first with the current surplus. As of December's revenue report, the state has $185.9 million of a surplus 6 months into this fiscal year. Revenue officials have told us that's expected to grow to $300 million by the end of June at the cutoff of the fiscal year. I'm just curious to hear both of you explain how we got here and how all this may play out into the future.
Well, the economy has changed in its turn for West Virginia. Right now, the energy sector is up. And then, you know, a lot of the work that's been done over the years is starting to pay dividends now. Unemployment's down, Medicaid usage is down, the SNAP benefits is down. These are all good things. People are going back to work. Personal income tax is up. That's an indicator of that. The sales tax collections are up, another indication that the economy is doing fairly well. But we have to keep in mind in West Virginia that we are on a roller coaster of our economy because of our reliance so much so in the energy industry. So I have concerns about that. These things can change on a dime. We've witnessed it change in the middle of the year. So I'm always very, very conservative from what I'm looking at. And that's one of the reasons why when the numbers you just mentioned there, we didn't mention the $58 million of unappropriated money from last year too. And that is setting out there as well. So we're doing well now. I hope it continues that way. That way we can go forward and still take our economy, the energy economy we got, and transition it into a manufacturing economy. And your previous segment was building on that when we were talking about Senate Bill 1, the last dollar in bill for community technical college education. Businesses look for that. How many associate degree, how well educated your workforce is. And this is the next step. We take down these barriers to business wanting to locate or expand in West Virginia.
The senator mentioned the energy economy, but revenue officials have also mentioned road bonding being a factor in this. Delegate, do you mind to respond to the state's current fiscal situation?
Well, we're certainly doing a lot better than what we have been doing. And the first time since I've been down here, we've got a little extra money that's coming in over and above what the estimates were originally forecast to be. But most of that's short-term economic activity, and we've heard from the revenue secretary that it's pipeline activity. There's about $4 billion worth of pipeline activity going on in West Virginia. You have the Roads for Prosperity program that's beginning to put some people back to work, and the overall national economy, the global economy, up until this point has been stronger. So we're benefiting from improved exports of coal and a stronger price there in the metallurgical market, as well as natural gas production. So the Senator's correct. You know, the things are doing better. But remember, we've come from the floor. So this time 2 years ago, we had holes just as big. So we can get 6 months of the year, and we can be right back where we were again. So we have to be cautious about some of the things that we do here. And the government's going to spend it all, it appears.
Yeah. Right, and we're going to talk about that here in just a second. I do want to ask you, in terms of the surplus, is there any appetite to backfill some of these agencies or sectors of government that have been subject to cuts over the past few years? We've heard about higher education. Do either of you?
I certainly have an appetite for that. And we had the folks from higher ed up with us yesterday in Senate Finance. And they've the numbers that we have, there's about $50 million that have come out of higher ed. We've also put an additional burden on them with these proposed pay raises. So they're cut pretty much to the bone under the current structure. So we're currently looking at whether or not that's a better use of some of this one-time short-term money, is to backfill some of those holes that they've had.
Very much so. When you're tight fiscally, what happens is it gives you an opportunity to contract government. And sometimes it's where government needed contracting. But then there's other places that we contract it, but we need to go back in and fill back in. What we got to be careful of, though, right now is that everybody, this is a really great time to be the finance chairman and a really bad time to be it, too. And I've experienced both sides of this. Everybody's coming in and they're wanting money for, and everybody's got these programs that they want funded. Well, we can't necessarily do that. And I'm in the business, and I think most of us are, is growing the fiscal pie in the state of West Virginia. So when we put money back into these programs, we want to do it in such a way that you know that you're going to see a return on your investment that gets us off the roller coaster that I was speaking of earlier and puts us on an escalator to where we are growing ourselves out and we're not so reliant on the energy industry or the service sector industry. And you guys were absolutely right on the pipeline. That's a short-term investment on that. The good news is that we will be exporting gas through those pipelines out of the state. That's a good thing as well. There's revenue that can be captured from that as well.
Right. One last question specifically about the surplus. I want to keep this very short. Three Republicans over in the House of Delegates yesterday called for a bill that would use the surplus, part of that surplus, to help President Trump fund a wall on the U.S. southern border. Governor Justice tweeted today that he supports the wall. He supports the president in that endeavor. West Virginia Public Broadcasting reached out to the governor's office about that funding proposal, whether or not, you know, his tweet today, you know, equates support for that proposed bill that hasn't yet been introduced. We received no answer from the governor's office on that. Can the both of you respond to that proposal that's come out of the House? We'll start, since that's over in your corner.
It's just silliness. I mean, I can give you a long list of needs that we have here in West Virginia, and a lot of uses for $10 million that would go way ahead about building a wall in on the southern border. So we need to create jobs. We're doing any construction around here, it needs to be in West Virginia. So this is a distraction, I'm not sure what motivated them to do this, but we need to focus on real problems that West Virginians have today here in West Virginia. So that's my response to that.
Senator?
I'm supportive of the president's wall, but in West Virginia, $10 million can be better spent. And look, we've got an economy that, in a population that is declining, the illegals, aliens, are not even interested in coming to West Virginia. Okay? And with that said, we can spend our $10 million somewhere else taking and building the economy so that our people that are living in West Virginia, our families that are living in West Virginia, will have a better opportunity into the future. This is a national issue. I know that some other states have been doing this as well, putting it out there. And I think it's a message that we support the president. I get that. But in reality, we're not going to see the $10 million pass the West Virginia legislature to go towards the wall when we have other needs to take care of, priorities.
Right. Appreciate that answer from both of you guys. Let's move broadly to take a look at the governor's proposed budget. This upcoming fiscal year, he's proposed a lot of new spending: tourism, substance abuse treatment, the Jim's Dream program, CTC bill there that you've championed in the past, intermediate courts, the teacher and state employee pay raises, PEIA, the list goes on and on and on. There's also some proposed tax revenue cuts, Social Security income tax rollback, as well as the business inventory personal property tax cut. With a surplus, when you take a look at the proposed budget, simple math would just tell you that spending and these rollbacks don't quite add up. So, Senator, we'll start with you, since you know the governor's agenda matches very closely with your caucus over in the Senate. How do you put this all together moving forward?
Well, that's what the legislative process is all about, is identifying the priorities and being able to work the numbers out in the end. I'll have to admit that when you hear all these different initiatives out here, it actually goes back to what I was just saying. In good times, everybody's got their different perspectives on what goes on. That's the beauty of having 100 members in the House and 34 in the Senate, and then the governors as well, to where we go through and we collectively debate back and forth, and the collective mind, the collective will from throughout the state will actually work together, and we'll be able to put something together that we're looking at how we prioritize and be able to take these excess revenues and either do tax reductions that could actually grow our economy or make some changes and fund some things that needed to be funded, especially in the education and the opioid, the drug abuse. We need to have a drug-free workforce ready to go to work that's educated as well, so that we can actually attract businesses and grow our existing businesses in the state of West Virginia. That message is always the singular message that I have on this, because it's the only way that we can stop the contracting of our fiscal revenues. You see what I'm saying on right. that? We must grow it so that we're no longer fighting over a shrinking pool of resources.
Right.
Delegate? So, let me guarantee you that the budget that the governor proposed isn't going to be the budget that comes out of the House. So, and not all these proposals that are out there are going to see the light of the day. So some of them require legislation we've still not even seen. So even the supplementals associated with the surpluses haven't hit the system yet. So there's lots of unknowns here. So we're talking about all this. We've been here a week. So this is somewhat fantasy. It's much easier to tell people no when you don't have it. And for a number of years, we've not had it. Now we've got it. Everyone's lining up with their particular idea about how we should spend this money. Some of them are good proposals. Some of them are good ideas, and I think some of them will make it through. But many of them, they'll be discussed and dismissed.
Right. I want to switch gears again really quickly. Considering the Supreme Court was under fire last year over its spending, legislature will take over the judiciary's budget beginning in 2021. That's according to Senate Joint Resolution 3 that was passed last year, approved by voters. I know you, Senator Blair, have been in touch with them to prepare them for that. You've been talking about, you know, easing them into the situation that they're about to find themselves in. But they gave a budget presentation yesterday, and really quickly, could you just recap what happened over there yesterday?
Well, here's the short recap, is they came in with about $8 million less in spending than what they did before. When the committee meeting was over, they actually presented to the Senate Finance Committee a line-by-line budget for the Supreme Court of Appeals, which that goes all the way down to where your circuit judges and into some of the lower courts here. It's an excellent thing. In fact, I'm glad you brought this up, because I have now started sending the message to other agencies. I did it with the Department of Ag of today, saying next year when you come in, I would appreciate it if you get ready and take your budget and break it down more line by line. And the reason for it is transparency. If we would have had transparency on the Supreme Court budget in the past, like 49 other states in the federal government, I don't believe that we would have ended up into the mess that we ended up in.
With impeachments and such.
Exactly. But you have to look at it from the standpoint that, you know, we've rebooted our court system. We were supposedly on the judicial hellhole list that we got off of that by some of the tort reforms. This clearly sent a message out to business in America and internationally as well, that we're serious about making West Virginia a good place to work, have a family, get an education, have a business, and be profitable. These are the things that we're looking for the people of West Virginia, and it all fits together. So that was a reboot mechanism. I think that that was a plus, even though personally, you know, those inside the Beltway here, we were disappointed in it, but it was a good thing in the long run.
Right. Delegate, 30 seconds on that.
We'll have the Supreme Court on Friday, and we'll see what they have to say. So, you know, we're uncovering additional things in terms of what's going on there with the court. So I think they're making an effort to be more transparent.
Great. Well, thanks, gentlemen. Thanks for the both of you joining us this evening. We're really looking forward to seeing how this budget plays out, and we'll be following along both committees and see how you guys do.
Absolute pleasure being here.
Great. I'm Dave Mistich. For everyone here at West Virginia Public Broadcasting, thanks for joining us and have a great evening.